Welcome to the Deep Dive, your go-to source for cutting through the noise and getting straight to the most important knowledge and insights. I'm Taylor Gates.
And I'm Charlie Page, here to unpack today's fascinating stories and connect the dots for you, helping you navigate the ever-evolving tech landscape.
Today, we're diving deep into TechCrunch for Friday, August 15th, 2025. We've got a formidable stack of sources covering everything from the intensifying AI talent wars and surprising shifts in the startup world to some truly concerning cybersecurity revelations that hit pretty close to home.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover there.
Our mission, as always, is to give you a shortcut to being truly well-informed with plenty of aha moments and practical takeaways along the way. Think of this as your personalized briefing, tailored to cut through the noise. The AI revolution, unpacking its rapid expansion and complexities. All right, let's kick things off by dissecting the absolute frenzy in the AI space. The competition for AI talent, it's not just for brilliant minds, but for the very infrastructure that fuels their work. It's red hot.
Completely.
Driving some truly eye-popping deals and investments across the board. It feels less like a race and more like a a full-blown gold rush with companies going to, well, extraordinary lengths.
It's more than just an arms race for technology, isn't it? It's fundamentally about securing the human capital and the foundational compute power needed to push these boundaries.
Right.
We're witnessing a scramble for resources that will define who truly leads the next wave of AI innovation.
You can really see that in action with Anthropic's latest strategic maneuver. They've basically acquired the entire Human Loop team.
Yeah, the whole team.
This isn't just a small addition. We're talking about all three co-founders, Raza Habib, Peter Hayes, and Jordan Burgess, along with approximately a dozen engineers and researchers. Human Loop had a laser focus on critical areas for enterprise AI: prompt management, large language model evaluation, and observability. Now, for those unfamiliar, prompt management is about, you know, effectively designing and organizing the instructions you give to an LLM to get the desired output.
Super important.
LLM evaluation is crucial for ensuring the model is actually performing as expected and not, say, hallucinating or making harmful mistakes.
Which happens.
And observability allows you to see what the model is doing under the hood, crucial for debugging and compliance in a real-world enterprise setting. Their expertise is absolutely essential for making LLMs reliable and scalable, especially for business-critical applications.
Absolutely.
This kind of a quihire is a classic playbook move, demonstrating just how intense the demand is for very specific high-level AI expertise right now. It's truly about getting the entire cohesive team, not just their IP or a few individual hires.
What this strategic talent acquisition by Anthropic really highlights is a broader, more sophisticated trend within the AI industry. It's about integrating highly specialized teams directly into their core strategy, which can, you know, dramatically accelerate their enterprise ambitions rather than the slower process of building from scratch.
Right, speeds things up.
This isn't just about growing headcount. It signals a clear intent to dominate specific high-value niches within the enterprise AI landscape, especially where reliability and performance are, well, non-negotiable.
And speaking of companies making serious waves, Cohere is another standout. They've just hit a staggering $6.8 billion valuation.
Wow.
This isn't speculative. It's backed by existing investors like AMD, NVIDIA, and Salesforce, all doubling down on their investments. That's a huge vote of confidence from players deeply embedded in the AI ecosystem.
Definitely.
But perhaps even more significant than the valuation itself is Cohere's latest key hire, Joelle Pinault.
Big name.
She's a major figure in AI, formerly Meta's vice president of AI research, where she oversaw their fundamental AI research, or FAIR, lab. She's stepping into a newly created role as Cohere's chief AI officer, tasked with overseeing their entire AI strategy across research, product, and policy teams.
That's a broad remit.
It is. And this appointment is particularly crucial for Cohere, whose core proposition has always been to offer secure, enterprise-geared LLMs. They've even recently launched an AI agent platform called North that allows enterprises and government agencies to deploy their secure LLMs privately on their own infrastructure.
Private deployment.
Hiring someone of Pinault's caliber and giving her such a broad mandate is a direct play to differentiate themselves against more open source models by emphasizing comprehensive support, rigorous research, and top-tier security.
When we connect this to the bigger picture, Cohere's strategy, reinforced by Pinault's appointment, It really underscores a critical market need for secure and private AI, especially when handling sensitive corporate or governmental data.
Yeah, super sensitive stuff.
Pinot's background suggests they are dead serious about pushing the state of the art in this highly specialized and secure domain. It brings up a very important question for the industry's future. Will the dominant paradigm be defined by these closed, highly secure enterprise models? Or will the open source movement ultimately prevail in terms of widespread adoption and innovation? Each approach has its clear advantages and disadvantages, right?
Absolutely. And the talent war truly reaches almost unimaginable heights when you look at Meta's superintelligence sprint. Mark Zuckerberg himself is reportedly deeply involved in recruiting.
Personally involved.
Personally reaching out to top candidates and offering what are being described as jaw-dropping compensation packages that can soar to over $1 billion over multiple years.
$1 billion, wow.
It's an unprecedented level of investment in human capital directly from the top. But it's not just about people. Meta is also pouring colossal amounts into infrastructure. They're constructing what they call Titan clusters like Prometheus in Ohio, which is poised to hit 1 gigawatt of compute power by 2026.
1 gigawatt.
And Hyperion in Louisiana, which they're scaling up to 5 gigawatts over several years. To put that in perspective, these projects promise to soak up enough energy to power millions of homes.
Millions. That's staggering.
Zuckerberg has articulated a very clear mission: to introduce personal superintelligence to the world. He makes a distinct point that this differs from rivals who, he says, are trying to automate all valuable work. His vision is deeply tied to Meta's own product ecosystem, specifically AR glasses and VR headsets.
Right, tying it back to their hardware.
Implying an AI that enhances individual human experience directly through their hardware. It's also worth noting that Meta recently invested $14.3 billion in Scale AI, which incidentally involved acquiring its founder and CEO, Alexander Wang, to lead their new unit, Meta Superintelligence Labs, or MSL.
Another huge acqui-hire, essentially.
Exactly. They've also brought on Shengjia Zhao as chief scientist, who previously pioneered a new scaling paradigm at OpenAI. These massive investments and strategic hires are all about building out Meta's own cutting-edge AI reasoning models, a domain where they currently don't offer a direct competitor to the likes of OpenAI or Google.
What's truly fascinating here is that this isn't merely about building slightly better models. It's about securing the human capital and the raw computing power to fundamentally dominate the future of AI.
Dominate.
The sheer scale of Meta's investment, from direct recruitment by Zuckerberg himself to these incredibly energy-guzzling data centers, reflects a very long-term, high-stakes strategic play, far beyond typical quarterly gains.
Right.
And this brings up a crucial and often overlooked question. At what environmental and resource cost are we pursuing these advancements? The energy demands alone are staggering, and they raise profound questions about sustainability and the broader impact on our planet.
That's a huge point. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The AI models themselves are evolving at breakneck speed, but not always in straightforward ways. This rapid evolution, while unlocking incredible new capabilities, is also creating new complexities for you, the user.
The rapid evolution of these models truly presents a dual challenge. We need to maximize their utility, pushing the boundaries of what they can do while simultaneously managing the inherent complexities that come with more powerful, nuanced AI. It's a, you know, a delicate balancing act between simplification for broad usability and providing the advanced functionality that expert users demand.
Absolutely. Take ChatGPT, for instance. Its growth continues to be nothing short of astounding. It's on track to hit 700 million weekly active users in early August.
700 million weekly.
Which means it has quadrupled in size over just the past year. It's now receiving an incredible 2.5 billion prompts daily worldwide.
Wow.
But there's a fascinating paradox here. OpenAI initially launched GPT-5 with the intent of a simplified, one-size-fits-all approach, hoping to streamline the user experience by eliminating the need for users to navigate its complicated model picker.
Trying to make it simple.
Yet they've since reintroduced a new, perhaps even more complicated, model picker with auto, fast, and thinking settings. It seems that even the most advanced models still require a degree of user guidance to truly optimize their output.
Right, the complexity creeps back in.
Beyond just text generation, ChatGPT Agent has been introduced, which is a significant leap forward. It's now capable of navigating your calendar, drafting presentations, running code, shopping online, and even handling complex workflows within a secure virtual environment.
So more like an actual assistant.
Exactly. This truly goes far beyond simple text generation, acting more like a digital assistant. They've also upgraded their conversational voice mode and image generation capabilities, even removing previous restrictions to allow images of public figures and symbols that were once declined. And for developers, the app now allows direct code editing in popular tools like Xcode and VS Code.
When we connect this to the bigger picture, the model picker paradox you just mentioned really highlights a fundamental tension in AI development.
Mm-hmm.
The desire for simplicity versus the inherent need for granularity to harness specific model strengths and nuances.
Yeah.
The agentic capabilities, on the other hand, signal a profound shift towards AI becoming a truly proactive assistant rather than just a reactive tool. This has immense implications for how we will interact with software and automate tasks in our daily lives.
Then you have Anthropic's Claude AI, which seems to be taking a different yet equally powerful approach. While ChatGPT is expanding horizontally across various functions, Claude is deepening its core capabilities. It has significantly enhanced its ability to handle longer prompts, now exceeding 200,000 tokens.
200,000 tokens, that's huge.
To clarify, a token is like a piece of a word, and 200,000 tokens could be equivalent to a full-length novel. But it's not just about the raw capacity. Claude's focus is on increasing the effective context window for better understanding.
Right, the effective window.
This means Claude can process and reason over much larger amounts of information at once, maintaining coherence and extracting insights from massive documents, making it incredibly powerful for complex tasks like, say, in-depth legal analysis, summarizing extensive research papers, or handling detailed financial reports.
Really useful for enterprise.
This focus is clearly paying off, too. Anthropic now holds significant market leadership in enterprise LLM usage, commanding 32% of the overall market, surpassing OpenAI's 25%.
Ahead of OpenAI there.
Even more impressively, in the critical area of coding, Claude holds a 42% share, more than double OpenAI's 21%. Their recent Claude 3.5 Sonnet and 3.7 Sonnet models have really fueled the surge in enterprise and developer usage.
The focus on a larger, effective context window is truly a critical advancement. And it's important to understand the nuance here. It's not just about the raw capacity of tokens, which is, you know, like having a massive library.
Right.
It's about the model's ability to truly comprehend cross-reference and utilize that vast amount of information simultaneously, which is like having an AI librarian who can read and connect every book on every shelf at once.
Great analogy.
This is precisely where real-world enterprise value is unlocked, especially in data-heavy and complex industries, transforming how businesses can leverage AI for insights and automation.
And on the complete other end of the spectrum, we're seeing incredible innovation in what some are calling tiny brains, big impact.
Tiny brains, I like that.
Multiverse Computing, for example, has introduced their Model Zoo, featuring what they call two of the smallest high-performing models ever. One, named Superfly, is a 94 million parameter model. To give you a sense of scale, that's humorously likened to the size of a fly's brain.
Wow, tiny indeed.
Their intent for these incredibly compact models is to embed them directly into Internet of Things or IoT devices and run them locally on everyday consumer electronics like smartphones, tablets, and PCs.
Running locally, that's key.
They're already in discussions with major device makers like Apple, Samsung, Sony, and HP, with HP even being an investor. Imagine your smart washing machine responding to intricate voice commands for troubleshooting, or your smartphone running a sophisticated AI assistant all on device without needing to connect to the cloud.
Mm.
This solves crucial problems around privacy, latency, and reliance on constant internet connectivity.
This push for both massive, all-encompassing models and these incredibly efficient, tiny models designed for specific on-device applications raises a very important question.
Mm.
Will we ultimately settle on one dominant AI architecture? Or will the future be a complex, heterogeneous ecosystem of specialized and general-purpose AIs?
Good question.
The evidence from Multiverse Computing and others suggests the latter, I think. With each type of AI serving distinct purposes and optimizing for different constraints, like power consumption, cost, and immediate responsiveness. It speaks to a future where AI is pervasive, from the data center to the smallest smart device.
Google is also actively embedding AI deeper into its consumer applications. They're now pushing AI into flight deals within Google Flights, using their advanced AI tools to help travelers find cheaper fares and improve overall travel planning.
Trying to make travel easier.
And their AI coding agent, Jules, has officially launched out of beta, integrating directly with GitHub for asynchronous code fixes and updates, which could be a game changer for software development teams. This clearly shows AI moving beyond just chatbots and into everyday utilities and professional tools. They're even making their notebook LM AI note-taking app available to younger users, age 13 and up, including those in Google Workspace for education, demonstrating a push for broader AI literacy and utility. So what does this all mean for you, the user, when we talk about the very real ethical and safety concerns surrounding these increasingly powerful AI systems? The capabilities are growing exponentially, but so too are the responsibilities and the potential risks. Feels like a critical crossroads.
This truly is a critical juncture. As AI becomes more integrated into our lives and capable of increasingly autonomous actions, the ethical guardrails, regulatory frameworks, and accountability mechanisms must evolve just as rapidly.
Gotta keep pace.
The potential for misuse or unintended consequences grows exponentially with the power and reach of these systems. It demands our keen attention.
We saw a really troubling example of this with a leaked internal Meta document that shockingly revealed their AI chatbot policies allowed AI personas to engage a child in conversations that are romantic or sensual, and even make statements that demean people on the basis of their protected characteristics, such as the deeply offensive example of Black people are dumber than white people.
That's horrifying.
Meta subsequently confirmed the document's authenticity, though they vehemently claimed these were erroneous and incorrect notes that have since been removed, and that their actual policies do not allow such abhorrent behavior.
Damage control, essentially.
They now state that their bots are explicitly not allowed to have flirtatious or romantic conversations with children, though they still permit kids aged 13 and older to engage with their AI chatbots. This revelation sparked immediate and widespread calls from researchers, mental health advocates, and lawmakers to severely restrict or even outright prevent kids from accessing AI chatbots altogether, citing their vulnerability and the very real risk of becoming too attached and potentially withdrawing from real-life interactions.
A valid concern.
A recent report highlighted that a striking 72% of teens admit to using AI companions. This incident truly underscores the enormous responsibility tech companies bear when developing AI that interacts with vulnerable populations.
This entire situation points to a profound and systemic challenge. When AI systems are designed with the capacity for such problematic interactions, even if the intent was never for them to be used in such a way, it highlights a critical failure in ethical foresight, internal policy review, and rigorous testing.
Absolutely.
The sheer scale of Meta's reach only amplifies the potential harm, making these design flaws incredibly dangerous. It's a stark reminder that simply having a policy isn't enough. The implementation and testing of that policy are paramount.
Then there's the persistent hallucination problem that continues to plague large language models. A privacy complaint was recently filed in Europe against ChatGPT after it provided false and defamatory information about an individual, including a completely false accusation of murder.
A false murder accusation? That's incredibly serious.
This is far from a minor glitch. It underscores the very significant legal and reputational implications of inaccurate AI output, especially when it concerns personal data. As a privacy rights advocacy group rightly pointed out, the GDPR, Europe's stringent privacy regulation, is crystal clear. Personal data must be accurate.
Right. Accuracy is mandated.
A small disclaimer that the chatbot can make mistakes is clearly not enough when it comes to spreading false, damaging information that could destroy someone's reputation or worse. The legal ramifications here are only just beginning to unfold.
The hallucination problem isn't just an inconvenience or a technical bug. It's a fundamental safety and trust issue for large language models. The legal precedents set by such complaints, particularly under robust privacy frameworks like GDPR, will be absolutely crucial in defining accountability for AI developers and operators. It forces a reckoning with the question, who is liable when AI generates libelous or damaging content?
It's not all doom and gloom when it comes to AI and security, though. We've seen positive developments like Google's AI-based Bug Hunter, for example, which successfully found 20 security vulnerabilities in software.
Okay, so AI helping security.
Clearly demonstrating AI's immense potential to enhance cybersecurity. However, on the flip side, software maintainers are expressing growing concerns about what they're calling AI slop bug bony reports.
AI slop.
Yeah. These are AI-generated reports claiming non-existent vulnerabilities, which merely add noise and make it much harder for human teams to identify and fix real security issues. This AI slop can actually make legitimate security efforts more difficult, as it floods teams with an overwhelming number of false positives, effectively burying critical alerts.
Right, creates more work. This dichotomy perfectly illustrates the double-edged sword of AI in cybersecurity. While it can indeed be a powerful tool for defense, its own inherent flaws can inadvertently create new problems, demanding sophisticated human oversight and rigorous critical evaluation to discern genuine threats from false alarms. It means we can't simply automate our way out of cybersecurity challenges.
And finally, a really critical issue about content rights and ethical data sourcing. Cloudflare, the internet infrastructure giant, has openly accused the AI startup Perplexity of crawling and scraping content from websites that have explicitly indicated they don't want to be scraped.
Going against website wishes.
Not only that, but Cloudflare alleges that Perplexity is obscuring its identity in an attempt to circumvent these preferences and avoid detection. This raises profound questions about content rights, fair use, and whether AI models are truly respecting the wishes of website owners when it comes to data acquisition.
Yeah, the ethics of scraping.
This isn't the first time Perplexity has faced such accusations. Last year, news outlets like Wired alleged plagiarism, and Perplexity's CEO notably struggled to define plagiarism in an interview, further muddying the waters.
This whole situation raises an absolutely fundamental question for the entire industry. As AI becomes increasingly powerful and integrated into our lives, who bears the responsibility for its outputs, especially when it infringes on privacy, spreads misinformation, or, as in this case, potentially disregards intellectual property and content rights?
Mm-hmm.
The industry is clearly grappling with these complex ethical and legal questions, and the answers that emerge will profoundly define AI's future acceptance, regulation, and indeed its very public trust. It's not just a technological challenge, but a deep societal reckoning.
Mm.
Two, the startup ecosystem. Funding, innovation, and challenges.
Let's switch gears now to the incredibly dynamic world of startups and venture capital. The funding landscape, while perhaps a bit more disciplined than in previous boom cycles, is still incredibly active.
Still money flowing, yeah.
Yeah, with some eye-popping valuations showing exactly where investor confidence lies, especially around anything touching AI infrastructure or massive market potential that demonstrates clear product market fit.
You're right. The venture capital market, while perhaps more disciplined and selective than it was just a few years ago, is still demonstrating a clear and aggressive appetite for companies that are either fundamental to the burgeoning AI boom or are proving highly efficient in their growth and market capture.
Right.
It's a landscape that prioritizes sustainable success over mere hype.
You can see that intense investor enthusiasm with expense management startup ramp. They just closed a fresh $500 million raise at a whopping $22.5 billion post-money valuation.
$22.5 billion, wow.
What makes this truly remarkable is the sheer speed of their growth.
Mm.
This round came just 45 days after a previous $200 million raise that valued them at $16 billion.
45 days, that's insane growth.
That's a rapid acceleration in valuation, showcasing how quickly a company can scale and attract capital when it hits a nerve in the market, consistently delivers value, and demonstrates strong execution. It indicates a very strong signal that investors are doubling down on what they perceive as a clear winner.
The speed of Ramp's valuation jump is indeed quite telling. It indicates that a potent combination of strong market fit, efficient operational execution, and a clear, compelling path to profitability is being exceptionally rewarded in this current discerning climate.
Mm-hmm.
Investors aren't just putting money in. They're willing to significantly increase their bets on perceived category leaders.
And in a very similar vein, but on the infrastructure side, AI data storage company Vast Data is reportedly in talks with Alphabet's Capital G and NVIDIA to fund a round at up to a $30 billion valuation.
$30 billion for storage.
This highlights not just significant investor interest, but a strategic imperative in the fundamental infrastructure supporting the entire AI boom. It's not just the AI models themselves that are attracting serious capital, but the immense, ever-growing data and storage needs that underpin them.
Exactly. You need somewhere to put all that data.
As AI models get larger and require more training data, the demand for efficient and scalable data storage solutions becomes paramount. But it's not just about the usual Silicon Valley suspects or the obvious AI infrastructure plays. Let's talk about Uzum.
Uzum, okay.
This Tashkent-headquartered startup in Uzbekistan just closed an all-equity round that brought its post-money valuation to approximately $1.5 billion, a nearly 30% jump from its previous unicorn status just last March.
$1.5 billion in Uzbekistan. Impressive.
What's truly fascinating about Uzum is its incredibly diverse portfolio. It spans e-commerce with Uzum Market, fintech with Uzum Bank, which has already issued an impressive 2 million Visa debit cards.
2 million cards.
At Express Food Delivery with Uzum Tezkor. They boast 17 million monthly active users, which is nearly half of Uzbekistan's adult population, or about two-thirds of all smartphone users in the country.
Huge market penetration.
To put that in perspective, that's a massive market penetration in a relatively short time. They've also seen $250 million in gross merchandise value in the first half of 2025, up nearly 1.5 times year over year.
Strong growth numbers.
Their unsecured lending business hit $200 million in financed volume in Q1, growing 3.4 times from the same period last year. And critically, they even posted $150 million in net income in 2024, a 50% year over year jump. This kind of rapid, profitable growth in an emerging market, building a comprehensive digital ecosystem, is truly something to watch and learn from.
What Uzum's success in Uzbekistan powerfully showcases is the immense potential for digital ecosystems to rapidly capture a significant portion of a country's population, especially in emerging markets where traditional infrastructure might be less developed.
Right, leapfrogging, perhaps.
It's a testament to the power of diverse service offerings bundled together and executed efficiently. And it raises an important question for you, the listener. Can this integrated digital ecosystem model be replicated successfully in other emerging markets around the globe? And what unique challenges do companies face in those regions compared to more mature tech economies? It's a fascinating blueprint for digital transformation.
Now, for founders looking to raise capital, especially a Series C or later stage round, the bar has definitely risen considerably.
Tougher environment.
Investors are no longer just chasing momentum or promising ideas. They're chasing certainty and looking for very clear category leaders. Companies must now demonstrably show they are defining their categories, have clear go-to-market and undeniable pull from customers, and critically, are growing efficiently.
Efficiency is key now.
It's no longer enough to just be growing. You need to show that you're on an undeniable trajectory to be a dominant market leader within your niche. For example, Sapphire Ventures, a prominent VC firm, has a stated practice of getting to know companies for a year or more before investing at Series B.
Building relationships.
Highlighting the importance of long-term relationships and proven performance. This suggests founders should treat fundraising itself like a go-to-market campaign, building relationships with VCs well in advance, cultivating that interest, and demonstrating consistent progress over time. As one VC put it, timing and preparation are everything at the Series C level.
This analysis of the current market underscores a crucial shift. Investors are prioritizing strong fundamentals, efficient growth, and clear market leadership. Even if the overall venture capital environment is tighter than the exuberance of prior years, this signals a greater maturity in the VC landscape, moving beyond just chasing momentum at any cost. It reflects a more discerning and strategic environment that prioritizes sustainable, defensible success over mere top-line growth. It's a clear message to founders that operational excellence is now as critical as visionary ideas.
Beyond the big numbers and funding rounds, the startup world is also tackling some truly fundamental challenges across various industries with novel and often surprising approaches.
Yeah, some really interesting stuff here.
These are the innovations that really show how technology can deliver tangible impact in the real world, addressing long-standing problems.
What's exciting about these companies is how they demonstrate that innovation isn't just confined to software and digital platforms. From addressing the growing energy demands of AI chips, to creating more sustainable food sources, to tackling industrial emissions.
Right, real physical world stuff.
These startups are leveraging cutting-edge technology to fundamentally reshape traditional industries and tackle significant global challenges. It's a testament to the diverse applications of entrepreneurial ingenuity.
One great example is Israel-based Neologic. Their mission is to build more energy-efficient CPUs specifically designed for AI data centers, which is rapidly becoming a critical and escalating bottleneck in the entire AI infrastructure world.
A huge problem to solve.
What's particularly innovative and seemingly counterintuitive about their method is that they're using more simplified logic with fewer transistors and logic gates to run faster while requiring significantly less power.
Simpler is faster and uses less power. Interesting.
Founders Avi Messica and Ziv Leshem were initially told their idea was impossible because you cannot innovate in logic synthesis, a foundational aspect of chip design. They're effectively proving that notion wrong, addressing a core challenge of AI's increasing energy consumption and environmental footprint, which is a major concern for hyperscalers like Google, Meta, and Microsoft.
Right.
If successful, this could reduce operating costs and environmental impact across the entire AI ecosystem.
The energy efficiency of AI data centers is an escalating concern, both economically and environmentally, especially with the explosion of large language models. Nealogic's approach to fundamental chip design is a refreshing and vital deviation from just continually throwing more compute power at the problem.
Yeah, different thinking.
It's a foundational innovation that could have widespread and profound impact on the sustainability and scalability of AI globally. It's truly thinking differently about a core problem.
Then there's Mission Barnes, which just received a landmark USDA approval for its animal-free cultured pork fat.
Cultured fat.
Okay, this is huge because this product can make plant-based meat alternatives much more delicious by providing authentic flavor and mouthfeel, allowing other companies to reduce reliance on expensive and often less convincing artificial flavorings.
Tackling the taste issue.
Mission Barnes plans to primarily supply other food manufacturers with this fat, which will then be integrated into popular products like bacon, meatball, and sausage alternatives made using pea protein. It's a very smart strategic play to tackle the taste and cost issues that have sometimes held back broader consumer adoption of plant-based options.
Right, it's bridging that gap.
Bridging the gap between perception and reality in alternative proteins.
This really highlights how specialized biotech innovations can address very specific sensory barriers to wider adoption of sustainable food alternatives. It's not just about creating a replacement. It's about creating a better or more authentic experience that appeals to a broader consumer base, which is crucial for moving beyond niche markets. It's a nuanced approach to food innovation.
And speaking of environmental impact, Seabound has an incredibly innovative carbon capture system designed specifically for ships.
Carbon capture on ships.
It works by transforming CO2 from the engine's exhaust into limestone, which is a key ingredient in cement. This offers a truly dual environmental benefit.
Wow, two birds with one stone.
It addresses pollution in both maritime shipping, which accounts for about 3% of global carbon emissions, and cement production, which is responsible for about 8% of global emissions. They're installing this groundbreaking system on a cement carrier, the UBC Cork, and here's the kicker. The captured limestone will even be offloaded and used to make more cement at a net zero plant in Norway.
That's a perfect circular economy example.
This kind of synergistic, closed-loop approach to sustainability, where waste from one industry becomes a valuable input for another, is exactly the kind of circular economy innovation we desperately need to scale.
The elegance of Seabound's solution lies in its ability to address two major industrial emitters simultaneously, creating a truly circular system where waste from one process becomes a valuable input for another. This raises an important question. How quickly can these specialized innovations scale to achieve widespread impact?
Right, scaling is always the challenge.
Regulatory support, broader industrial adoption, and cost effectiveness will be absolutely key for technologies like this to truly move the needle on global emissions.
Finally, in the evolving digital economy, Lava Payments is tackling a very modern and somewhat abstract problem for the burgeoning world of AI agents.
Payments for AI agents.
Yeah. They've developed a new digital wallet designed specifically for what they call the agent-native economy. This allows AI agents to make payments seamlessly using a single set of usage credits across different merchants and foundational models like GPT and Claude.
Okay, streamlining payments for bots.
The goal here is to overcome the constant payment blocks and friction points that autonomous AI agents often encounter when trying to perform multi-step tasks online. Think about it like this. Today, if your smart home AI tried to order groceries online, it might get rejected at the payment gateway for every single item because the systems aren't designed for non-human payers.
Right. Constant friction.
Lava aims to solve that continuous friction, much like how we can access the internet without paying for each individual web page we visit.
Lava Payments is indeed anticipating a future where AI agents are truly autonomous actors in the digital economy. If these agents are constantly hitting payment friction, their utility is severely limited. This digital wallet solution could prove absolutely crucial for enabling a truly agent-native internet, where AI can seamlessly execute tasks involving transactions without constant human intervention.
Yeah.
It's a glimpse into a future where AI handles more of our digital interactions, but it also raises important questions about security and accountability for those automated payments.
But not every startup journey is smooth sailing, and recent events highlight the often unseen complexities of growth and exit strategies, especially in the red-hot AI coding space.
Yeah, the reality behind the headlines.
Even big deals can have unexpected and sometimes unsettling fallout for the people involved.
It's critically important to look beyond the celebratory headlines of major acquisitions and really understand the underlying financial realities and human impacts, especially in sectors with inherently high burn rates and intense competitive pressures. The true story of an exit often lies in the details.
This brings us to the controversial Google deal involving Windsurf. Google paid Windsurf $2.4 billion, not to acquire the company outright, but to license its technology and simultaneously hire away its CEO and top talent.
So a license and talent grab, not an acquisition.
Exactly. While founders and VCs undoubtedly profited handsomely, with the investor's portion alone being a reported $1.2 billion, this deal rattled Silicon Valley because a large portion of Windsurf's approximately 250 employees, particularly those hired in the last year, did not receive a payout.
Ouch. Employees left out.
Why? The core reason is a harsh truth about AI coding assistants. Despite their hype and transformative potential, they can be massively money-losing businesses with very negative gross margins.
Negative margins, that's tough.
This is due to the incredibly high and ever-increasing costs of using large language models. The model makers are constantly fine-tuning for coding improvements, which paradoxically makes the latest, most capable models more expensive to run.
Right, the better models cost more to use.
This cash burn, combined with fierce competition from rivals like Anysphere's Cursor, GitHub Copilot, Cognition, OpenAI, and Anthropic, makes it a truly treacherous market to operate in. Google was essentially paying to shut down a competitor, acquire key talent and license tech without taking on the entire struggling business.
What's truly striking here is that while big exits like this grab headlines and are often celebrated as successes, the truth bomb from the Windsurf story is about how these complex deals impact the broader workforce.
Yeah, the human cost.
It highlights the often unseen financial realities and incredibly difficult decisions behind major tech acquisitions, especially when startups are burning cash at such a high rate to keep up with competitive demands in an expensive AI landscape. This raises a profound question for you, the listener, and for founders. How do you balance rapid innovation and the relentless pursuit of funding with ensuring a fair and equitable outcome for your entire team, particularly when the underlying business model has such inherently high and escalating costs? It's a tension that will only grow.
On a different note, but still within the realm of startup and company transitions, Manish Chandra, the CEO and founder of Poshmark, the popular fashion resale marketplace, is stepping down after nearly 15 years.
15 years, long run.
He's transitioning to a board member role, and Namsoon Kim has been appointed as his successor. This serves as a significant reminder that even in established tech companies, leadership transitions are a natural, often necessary part of the life cycle, sometimes signaling a new phase of growth or a strategic pivot as companies mature and adapt to changing market conditions. 3, cybersecurity and privacy, a growing battleground. Now, let's pivot to a critical and unfortunately constant theme in the tech world, cybersecurity and privacy. The attacks are becoming more frequent, more sophisticated, and incredibly varied.
Relentless, really.
Impacting everything from major national infrastructure to the most personal data on new social apps. It's a relentless battleground.
The landscape of cyber threats is indeed evolving at an alarming pace, showcasing a blend of highly sophisticated exploits and surprisingly fundamental human vulnerabilities. It's a pervasive challenge that demands not just constant technological vigilance, but also a deep understanding of human psychology and organizational weaknesses.
We've continued to see major critical infrastructure targeted. For instance, there was a significant data breach at French telecom giant Booz, affecting millions of customers.
Millions affected there.
This closely followed a similar attack on Orange Telecom in July, both pointing to ongoing systemic vulnerabilities in critical infrastructure across nation states. It's a stark reminder that no sector, regardless of how essential, is truly immune from these persistent threats, and that essential services are increasingly a target. But it's not just large corporations and critical infrastructure. Consider the unsettling irony of TeenHer, a dating gossip app for men, which was caught spilling the personal information of thousands of its users to the open web.
A gossip app leaking secrets. Oh, the irony.
This included highly sensitive data like uploaded selfies, and even government-issued driver's licenses. What's truly astounding is that TechCrunch reporters were able to find these licenses within 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Thanks to shoddy coding and security flaws in the app's publicly accessible backend system. Even more concerning, the app's developer, Xavier Lampkin, didn't even commit to notifying affected users or state regulators about the security lapse, instead claiming there was no breach.
Denying it, despite the evidence. Not good.
This highlights the severe privacy risks inherent in apps that require users to submit sensitive identity documents, especially when the security practices are so laughably lax. It's a stark reminder of how quickly personal data can be exposed when basic security measures are neglected.
What's truly unsettling here is the recurring threat of human vulnerability and systemic weaknesses in these attacks, whether it's through sophisticated social engineering like phishing or exploiting previously unknown software flaws. It's often about exploiting the weakest link in the chain.
The weakest link.
Which can be an individual, a poorly coded app, or an unpatched system. The TeenHer case is particularly egregious because it involves such highly sensitive personal data being exposed due to negligence. This raises a critical and pressing question for you, the listener. With such pervasive and varied threats, how can individuals and organizations truly stay ahead and protect themselves? Especially when the weakest link might be a newly launched app with shockingly poor security practices.
Even big tech itself isn't immune. Google recently confirmed that its Salesforce database, which they use for small and medium-sized businesses, was breached by the notorious hacking group Shiny Hunters, also known as UNC 6040.
Shiny Hunters again.
This group relied on sophisticated voice phishing techniques to gain access. To clarify, voice phishing isn't just a simple scam call. It often involves highly convincing impersonation of IT support, a senior executive, or a trusted vendor.
Deepfakes may be involved too.
Using social engineering tactics and sometimes even deepfake audio to trick employees into revealing sensitive credentials or granting access. Similarly, Cisco disclosed a data breach, including customer names, organizations, addresses, and phone numbers, which was also linked to a voice phishing attack.
So voice phishing is hitting big targets.
These incidents underscore that even large, well-resourced companies with robust technical defenses can fall victim to social engineering tactics that exploit human trust and vulnerabilities. And perhaps most concerning are the zero-day vulnerabilities that are being actively exploited. SonicWall, a cybersecurity company, is urging customers to immediately disable SSL VPN, their secure remote access software, amid reports of widespread ransomware attacks.
Disable it completely. That's serious.
Security researchers strongly suggest a zero-day bug, meaning a critical flaw unknown to SonicWall itself, for which no patch exists, is likely being actively exploited in the wild.
0 days are the worst.
Furthermore, a newly discovered zero-day bug in Microsoft SharePoint is under widespread attack, allowing hackers to steal private digital keys without any credentials whatsoever. This vulnerability could then allow them to access linked apps like Outlook, Teams, and OneDrive, potentially compromising thousands of small to medium-sized businesses, U.S. federal agencies, universities, and energy companies.
That could be catastrophic.
The danger of a zero-day is that defenders have no prior knowledge or defense, making immediate mitigation extremely challenging.
This confluence of attacks, ranging from insidious social engineering to sophisticated unpatched zero-day exploits, truly highlights a fundamental asymmetry in cybersecurity. Defenders must protect every possible entry point across vast and complex networks.
An impossible task sometimes.
While attackers only need to find one single exploitable weakness, the ongoing nature of these widespread attacks on unpatched vulnerabilities means that the window of opportunity for attackers is significant, and the consequences for those affected can be devastating. It's a constant cat and mouse game, with the advantage often shifting to the aggressors.
It's not just individual companies and users facing these threats. Nation-states and organized criminal groups are deeply involved in this cyber battleground, with serious real-world consequences that extend beyond mere data theft into physical sabotage and illicit funding for dangerous programs.
When we connect this to the bigger picture, it becomes abundantly clear that cyber warfare has truly become an extension of geopolitical conflict and economic strategy.
Absolutely.
The consequences are severe and tangible, ranging from sabotaging critical infrastructure to directly funding illicit state programs. The digital realm is no longer just a virtual space. It is now a primary theater of conflict with very real-world impacts.
We saw alarming reports of direct Russian sabotage of infrastructure. Norway's security police chief openly blamed Russian hackers for hijacking a dam's computer systems to open a floodgate, resulting in the deliberate spilling of millions of gallons of water.
Physical sabotage via hacking.
This isn't just data exfiltration, it's a direct physical impact, causing immediate damage. There are also strong allegations that Russian government hackers are behind the breach of the U.S. federal court's PACER filing system, potentially snooping on sensitive criminal cases.
Snooping on court cases.
This fits a disturbing pattern, recalling previous Russian cyber attacks on Ukraine's power grid in 2015 and 2016, which led to widespread blackouts and demonstrated their willingness to use cyber means for physical disruption and political leverage.
The direct sabotage of physical infrastructure through cyber means is a grave escalation, demonstrating the tangible and immediate real-world consequences of these digital conflicts. It underscores the critical need for robust cybersecurity that extends beyond merely protecting data to safeguarding the very physical systems that underpin our societies. This kind of attack is a clear warning shot about the evolving nature of warfare.
Then we have North Korea, which, largely cut off from the international banking system due to sanctions, has become a formidable threat by systematically targeting Western companies to steal cryptocurrency.
Crypto theft for state funding.
This illicit activity directly funds its sanctioned nuclear weapons program. They've reportedly drained $44.2 million from CoinDCX and were linked to the Bybit hack, among others. What's also fascinating and deeply concerning is their reliance on thousands of remote IT workers who infiltrate tech companies globally using false identities to earn wages, steal intellectual property, and even extort companies.
Wow, using fake IT workers as spies and thieves.
It's a sophisticated, multi-pronged economic and intelligence operation run on a global scale, exploiting the very fabric of remote work and the gig economy.
North Korea's reliance on cybercrime to fund its illicit programs highlights a disturbing nexus between state-sponsored hacking and organized crime. It's a unique and persistent threat model that cleverly exploits the vulnerabilities inherent in our globalized digital economy. This raises an incredibly important question. Given the sheer scale and sophistication of these state-sponsored threats, how can the private sector effectively defend itself without direct governmental assistance? And where does that ultimate responsibility lie?
Good question.
It's clearly a shared burden, but the lines of accountability and collaborative defense are still being defined and negotiated.
Amidst all these threats, it's worth noting that law enforcement is striking back. The U.S. government, for instance, recently announced the seizure of $1 million from the Royal and Black Suit ransomware gang.
A million seized.
Which has been responsible for extorting a staggering $370 million since 2022. While $1 million might seem like a small dent in such a large operation, these seizures showcase ongoing, concerted efforts to counter cybercrime, disrupt their financial incentives, and demonstrate that these groups are not entirely untouchable.
Send the message, at least.
It sends a message, however small, that there are consequences for their actions. Beyond direct attacks and state-sponsored operations, there are wider concerns about the future of digital rights, with growing calls for transparency and accountability from the tech industry as governments increasingly exert their influence over digital spaces.
This is a complex and often murky terrain where national security interests, governmental demands, and fundamental individual privacy and free speech rights frequently collide.
Right.
The blurring lines demand critical thinking from all of us about the future of digital governance and, ultimately, who is truly safeguarding user rights in this evolving landscape.
Ron Dibert, the director of the prominent digital human rights group Citizen Lab, recently issued a stark warning to the cyber industry that really captured attention. He spoke about a dramatic descent into authoritarianism in the U.S., which he describes as a fusion of tech and fascism.
Strong words, fusion of tech and fascism.
He urged the cybersecurity community to be acutely aware of this trend and, critically, to not contribute to it or even to actively help reverse it. He highlighted how politics has increasingly and inextricably entered the realm of cybersecurity, urging professionals to consider the broader human rights implications of their work.
A call for ethical reflection in the industry.
This is a powerful and uncomfortable call to action. For an industry that has historically often tried to remain apolitical, viewing its work purely through a technical lens.
Dibert's warning truly underscores the potential for powerful technologies, originally designed for other purposes, to be repurposed in ways that can erode fundamental freedoms and democratic principles. It highlights the profound ethical responsibility of those who develop and operate these systems, urging them to consider the societal implications beyond their immediate technical functions. It's a necessary, if unsettling, conversation.
Apple has also found itself caught in this crossfire, specifically alerting Iranians to iPhone spyware attacks.
Spyware alerts from Apple.
This is part of a broader context where secret surveillance court orders in the UK legally bar tech companies from revealing details of such orders or even their very existence despite public leaks. This creates a deeply murky environment where users may not know if their communications are being secretly accessed by government entities.
Secret orders. Lack of transparency.
Interestingly, at least one tech giant, widely implied to be Google, has publicly confirmed they haven't received a UK technical capabilities notice, stating unequivocally that they've never built any mechanism or backdoor to circumvent end-to-end encryption.
Google pushing back publicly.
This public statement, in contrast to the secrecy surrounding other orders, underscores the tension between national security demands and corporate transparency, leaving users in the dark about how their data might be accessed.
This specific situation raises a pivotal question. When governments exert pressure or exploit vulnerabilities, what is the fundamental role and responsibility of tech companies in safeguarding fundamental user rights globally?
Yeah, where do they stand?
The legal and ethical frameworks in this area are still nascent, and the lack of transparency from certain governments creates significant challenges for both companies trying to protect their users and for individuals trying to understand the privacy of their own communications. It's a tension that will continue to define the digital rights debate.
Finally, we revisit social media's constantly shifting privacy postures. Meta's controversial internal policies on AI chatbots, initially allowing romantic chats with children or demeaning statements, and their subsequent traumatic reversal after public outcry, vividly show how quickly public backlash can force a change in policy, even for a giant like Meta.
Public pressure works sometimes.
Similarly, Blueski, the decentralized social app, is actively revamping its policies to purposefully shape its community and the behavior of its users, overtly trying to nudge users to be nicer and more respectful.
Trying to engineer civility.
They're also implementing age assurance requirements for regulatory compliance, like the UK's Online Safety Act, which could require users to scan their face, upload ID, or enter payment card details to access content if it's deemed adult. These moves illustrate the immense pressure social platforms are under to self-regulate and respond to public and governmental demands for safer online spaces, even if it compromises some of the initial open platform ethos.
This situation raises an essential question. Can social media platforms truly be safe spaces for all users, while simultaneously maintaining their core appeal of open expression, creativity, and connection?
The core dilemma.
The inherent tension between stricter moderation, increasing privacy demands, and the desire for open platforms will continue to be a defining challenge for social media companies, forcing them to constantly reevaluate their fundamental design and purpose. It's a tightrope walk with significant consequences. 4. Consumer tech and social platforms, evolution and controversy.
Let's pivot now to the gadgets and digital platforms that shape our daily lives. The competition for your attention and your dollars continues to heat up, with AI now becoming a central battleground for both Google and Apple in their hardware ecosystems.
Right.
It's not just about specs anymore, but about intelligent integration.
You're absolutely right. This isn't merely about incremental upgrades or faster processors anymore. It's about a fundamental shift. Yeah. A push for deeper, more pervasive integration of AI into our devices.
AI everywhere.
The goal is to transform them into truly intelligent, interconnected companions that not only respond to our needs, but proactively anticipate them. The ultimate competition is for owning and enhancing the entire smart life experience for you, the user.
Absolutely. The Made by Google 2025 event is highly anticipated, with widespread expectations for the Pixel 10 series to be powered by a new, more advanced Tensor G5 processor.
Tensor G5.
This is ushering in what Google is calling the Gemini era for Pixel, implying deep integration with Google's powerful Gemini AI features directly on the device.
On-device AI focus.
We're also hearing about potential significant camera improvements for the Pro models and the long-awaited support for Qi 2 wireless charging with magnetic accessories, similar to Apple's MagSafe, with Google's rumored Pixel Snap phone case.
Finally catching up on magnetic charging.
The Pixel Watch 4 is also expected to feature a thicker design, potentially allowing for a longer battery life, and smaller bezels for a more immersive display. This clearly signals Google's aggressive push for a tightly integrated Pixel ecosystem, leveraging their AI prowess to differentiate their hardware. Apple, on its side, is also gearing up for its September hardware event, where the iPhone 17 lineup is expected to be unveiled. Rumors suggest we might even see the thinnest iPhone ever, potentially dubbed the iPhone Air.
iPhone Air. Thinnest ever.
Alongside redesigned AirPods. Conceptual renderings for the iPhone 17 Pro show quite significant camera changes, with a unique rectangular bar across the back suggesting a major overhaul in photographic capabilities.
Interesting camera design shift.
There's even talk of a potential switch from titanium back to aluminum for the screen band on some models to reduce costs and weight, a strategic move. And in a notable development following its ongoing legal dispute with Masimo, blood oxygen monitoring is reportedly returning to Apple's latest Apple Watches.
Ah, blood oxygen is back.
This indicates a resolution or a clever technical workaround to the previous patent infringement ruling that forced its removal. Significantly, Apple CEO Tim Cook has stated the company is significantly increasing its AI investments and reallocating a fair number of people to focus on AI.
Playing catch up on AI, maybe.
Openly acknowledging that they've perhaps fallen behind some competitors. They're even open to M&A, having reportedly acquired 7 smaller AI-focused companies this year alone to accelerate their roadmap.
What's truly striking here is that both Google and Apple, these titans of consumer tech, are clearly pushing for deeper, more seamless integration of AI into their hardware ecosystems. They're trying to evolve our devices beyond mere tools, transforming them into intelligent, interconnected companions that anticipate our needs.
Right, the proactive assistant vision.
This battle isn't just about raw specifications anymore. It's about owning and enhancing the entire smart life experience. This naturally leads to a crucial question for you, the listener.
Yeah.
As our devices become more integrated, more proactive, and more AI-powered, how do we effectively maintain control over our digital lives and ensure our privacy when these systems are designed to be so deeply embedded and anticipatory?
And as part of that integrated ecosystem push, Apple is rolling out AppleCare One, a new bundled subscription service that, for the very first time, offers integrated coverage for all your Apple products, your iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
One plan for everything.
Including valuable theft and loss protection that extends beyond just the iPhone. What's more, you can now add most products up to 4 years old to the plan after a diagnostic check, extending the life of your devices under coverage.
Makes the ecosystem stickier.
This is a significant strategic move to deepen customer loyalty, make their ecosystem even stickier, and perhaps encourage users to keep their Apple devices for longer within a single convenient coverage plan. The social media landscape, as we all know, is always shifting beneath our feet. As platforms grapple with rapid growth, the complexities of community standards, and increasing regulatory pressures from governments concerned about safety and content.
A constant balancing act.
It's a constant tightrope walk.
When we connect this to the bigger picture, it's clear that social platforms are under immense and multifaceted pressure. It's not just about growing their user bases anymore. It's about becoming safer and more responsible, often through stricter moderation, content labeling, and implementing more robust parental controls.
Right.
This is a genuinely difficult balancing act, as too much control can inadvertently stifle the very open expression and creativity that makes these platforms so popular in the first place.
Boosky, the decentralized social app conceptualized by Jack Dorsey, built on the open source AT protocol, is a fascinating experiment in this evolving landscape. It offers users algorithmic choice, meaning you can choose how your feed is curated, and community-specific moderation, giving users more say in their online environment.
More user control there.
It's seen rapid user growth, topping 1 million downloads by July 2023, and attracting notable public figures and news organizations. They've recently undertaken a massive revamp to policies and community guidelines to purposefully shape its community and the behavior of its users, overtly trying to nudge users to be nicer and more respectful.
Edging niceness.
For regulatory compliance, they've also introduced age assurance, with the UK's Online Safety Act now requiring users in that country to potentially scan their face, upload an ID, or enter payment card details to use the site if adult content is present.
Age verification challenges.
This is a direct response to prior controversies around moderation issues, including allegations of failing to protect marginalized users and allowing racial slurs in account handles, which even led to a posting strike by some users. It demonstrates the challenge of building a truly open platform while also ensuring a safe and civil environment.
Boosky's journey truly highlights the inherent challenges of building a genuinely open, decentralized social platform while simultaneously trying to maintain a civil and safe environment. The push for age assurance and stricter content guidelines, while necessary for regulatory compliance and user safety, often runs counter to the initial ethos of open, permissionless platforms.
Yeah, that core tension.
It's a fundamental tension between freedom and safety that these platforms must navigate.
Instagram is also navigating a complex balancing act between user demands, safety, and business realities. They've added new protections for accounts that primarily feature children, aiming to prevent potentially suspicious adults from finding these accounts, and offering new safety features in DMs for teens, like helpful safety tips and displaying when an account joined Instagram.
Important child safety moves.
This is a direct response to growing societal concerns about child safety on social media. However, they've also faced user backlash, like with the somewhat controversial launch of Instagram Map, where many users felt the feature was unwanted or intrusive to their privacy.
Right, the map backlash.
And in a move that some speculate is a measure to save on hosting costs, they now require users to have at least 1,000 followers to go live.
Limiting live streaming access.
While this might indeed limit lower quality streams, it also significantly impacts accessibility for smaller creators who might use live video for community building.
Instagram's approach illustrates the constant and delicate tension between user demands for new features, the increasing regulatory pressures for safety, and the underlying economic realities of running such massive global platforms. The 1,000 followers to go live requirement, if indeed primarily motivated by cost saving, is a telling sign of the underlying financial strain even large platforms face with certain resource-intensive features.
Interesting point.
It's a constant negotiation between what users want, what regulators demand, and what the business can sustain.
TikTok, too, finds itself in a precarious geopolitical position with its ongoing U.S. dilemma. The company is merging its core product and trust and safety teams amidst persistent uncertainty about its future in the U.S.
Still up in the air.
With the U.S. Commerce Secretary even stating TikTok could go dark if China doesn't approve a sale and the U.S. doesn't gain control over its algorithm. In terms of content control, they've publicly launched Footnotes, a crowdsourced fact-checking system strikingly similar to X's Community Notes.
Like Community Notes for TikTok.
Allowing U.S. users to write and rate notes on videos that might contain misinformation. They've also added new parental controls to family pairing, allowing parents to block specific accounts and receive automatic notifications when their teens upload public videos. These are clear efforts to address ongoing concerns about content moderation and child safety.
This specific situation with TikTok raises an important question that applies to many global platforms. Can these platforms truly be safe spaces for all users, while simultaneously maintaining their core appeal of open expression, creativity, and connection, especially when caught in the crosshairs of geopolitical tensions? The external pressures from governments, combined with internal drives for growth and responsibility, create a constantly shifting and often contradictory set of demands that platforms visibly struggle to meet.
And in a truly nostalgic twist, Elon Musk has announced that X, formerly Twitter, has discovered and is actively working to restore user access to the archive of Vine.
Vine. Bringing Vine back.
The archive, at least. For those who remember, Vine was the immensely popular 6-second looping video app that Twitter acquired and later, controversially, shut down. Vine was effectively a precursor to TikTok, and its content continues to resonate culturally, with many popular Vines still being shared years later.
Yeah, some classics on there.
Bringing back its archive could tap into a powerful wave of digital nostalgia and provide a valuable historical record of early short-form video content. Beyond the apps and devices, AI is quietly, or in some cases, not so quietly, transforming how we interact with everyday services, aiming for seamless integration and personalized convenience.
It's creeping in everywhere.
It's moving from being a background technology to being at the forefront of our daily experiences.
This trend demonstrates a clear strategic direction. Technology companies are leveraging AI to make our daily lives more convenient and personalized, often by making digital assistants more agentic. It's about anticipating our needs and proactively taking action on our behalf, which fundamentally changes the user experience from reactive to predictive and assistive.
A great example of this subtle integration is Waymo's new Spotify integration in its robotaxis. Riders can now seamlessly control music and tweak audio levels directly from the Waymo app.
Personalizing the robotaxi ride.
Making the backseat of the robotaxi feel more like my own space, as one user put it. It's a small detail, but that level of personalization and control in an autonomous vehicle can be a powerful driver for customer loyalty and comfort. It shows AI integrating into physical experiences to enhance convenience and a sense of ownership. Airbnb is also jumping on the convenience train, launching Reserve Now, Pay Later for US users.
More payment flexibility.
This feature allows travelers to book properties without paying upfront, with the payment due before the free cancellation period ends for flexible or moderate cancellation policies. While the Buy Now, Pay Later concept isn't entirely new to Airbnb, they've had similar options before. This is a significant step in offering more widespread financial flexibility to travelers, potentially boosting bookings and reducing commitment barriers for users planning trips. Spotify is pushing its AI capabilities deeper into the user experience with its AI DJ feature, allowing premium subscribers to make voice requests to change music or mood, engaging in a more conversational way with their listening experience.
Talking to your music app.
They anticipate consumer experiences across their platform to become much more interactive. They've also expanded audiobooks access to family plan members in the US for the first time with the Audiobooks Plus plan, recognizing the growing popularity of spoken word content.
Audiobooks for the family.
Critically, Spotify expects its AI to move beyond just predictions about what you might like, to truly reason over user listening history and interactions, indicating a shift towards more sophisticated, context-aware AI that can understand why you like something and build on that deeper understanding.
As AI agents become increasingly intertwined with our finances and significant decisions, this raises a crucial and pressing question. How do we ensure absolute transparency about data usage, maintain user control and agency, and rigorously prevent potential manipulation, especially when advertising gets subtly woven into these helpful conversations as some companies are exploring?
Right, the advertising angle is tricky.
The line between assistance and influence can become very blurry, and that demands vigilance.
And finally, Amazon's upgraded Alexa Plus service, powered by new large language models, aims to take auctions for people, such as booking dinner reservations or ordering Uber rides.
Alexa getting more proactive.
There's even talk of integrating AI-generated ads into these multi-step conversations, which is certainly new territory.
Ads in conversations.
However, initial user interface challenges have been observed with the new Alexa app, with navigation being unclear and the assistant sometimes struggling with multi-step commands or even providing incorrect information about where to find things within its own app.
Still some kinks to work out.
This shows the ambitious vision for agentic AI, but also the very real and significant hurdles in making these features truly seamless and reliable for everyday use. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy's comments about wanting to put ads into Alexa conversations also highlight a new, largely uncharted territory for advertising and user interaction, where marketing might blend even more seamlessly into helpful advice.
This demonstrates a clear and accelerating trend. Technology companies are aggressively leveraging AI to make our daily lives not just more convenient, but deeply personalized, often by making digital assistants increasingly agentic. And to reiterate, this raises a very important question. As AI agents become more intertwined with our finances and decision-making, how do we ensure transparency about their data usage, maintain ultimate user control, and prevent any potential manipulation, especially when advertising gets subtly woven into these helpful conversations?
Yeah.
The interface, as you mentioned, is a critical component of that transparency and control. A clear, intuitive design can empower users, while a confusing one can obscure the AI's true intent. Outro.
So, what does this all mean for you, our listener? Today's deep dive into TechCrunch on August 15th, 2025, really showed us the immense forces shaping our tech world, from the boardrooms of Silicon Valley to the very small devices in your pocket and home.
Indeed. We explore the high-stakes AI talent war and its profound implications for the future of innovation, the complex evolution of AI models, and the critical ethical dilemmas they present, which demand constant scrutiny.
Right.
We also saw how the startup funding landscape is maturing, increasingly rewarding efficiency and truly disruptive innovation across incredibly diverse fields. And the constant battle against cyber threats continues to evolve, with profound implications for personal privacy, corporate security, and even national security.
And on the consumer side, from the latest Pixel and iPhone advancements that push AI directly into your hands, to the ever-changing dynamics of social media platforms and the deep, often subtle integration of AI into everyday experiences, technology is becoming more ingrained, more intelligent, and in many ways more intricately woven into the very fabric of our daily lives.
This brings us to a crucial question for you, our listener. As technology continues its relentless march forward, integrating AI into nearly every facet of our existence, what aspects of privacy, personal control, and ethical development matter most to you? How do you think we, as a society, ensure that this powerful and rapidly evolving future remains truly human-centric, designed for our benefit and not at our expense? What role do you play in shaping it, through your choices and your voice?
That's a powerful thought to leave with, and one we all need to consider. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, keep digging for knowledge and stay curious.
And keep thinking critically about the world around you.